As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
That is hammered!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 72 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Andy, how are you doing today?
Grant, I'm okay. I'm very tired. I'm very tired. I've had some travel indignities, we should say, over the past few days. But we're here in Phoenix. It's the morning of Game 4 of the World Series. It's been a good series so far. Well, there was one good game. But it's been competitive, I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
I think it's been a good series. Yeah, but would you say that it's been a spooky series? Because it's Halloween.
Ah, yes. Happy Halloween.
I don't know, man. Mark, what's up?
Well, it's Halloween, which is a big kid holiday here. So as soon as I'm done with this podcast, I'm done with work for the day because I got to go be with the kids for Halloween, man. So
what are your kids? What are they dressed up as?
Well, they're Filipino, Grant. What are they dressed as? They're from the show Miraculous. We've got Cat Noir and Ladybug from Miraculous. Yes.
Okay.
Probably below the age group for your crew.
My daughter is 10. My youngest daughter's 10, and she's from a show called The Owl House, some character. So yeah, they're doing the same thing where it's like just some show that I don't resonate with. So what happened to like vampires? You know what I mean? What happened to the witches? Huh?
There was a kid's show my daughter liked. It was a vampire show, actually.
Oh, really?
Vampirina was the name of it. Yes, it was a purple vampire. But she aged out of that. That was when she was really, really small. Now she's enough of a smartass to say funny things back to me. So
you know what my 15-year-old is? She's Cher from Clueless.
Hey, like, yeah,
you know,
sure.
That's where, you know, it's something I get. Something mm-hmm. I get. Alicia.
When you said that, I was like, she made a cameo in Clueless? That's like the level I'm functioning at right now.
I'm with you.
I was like, is that Alicia Silverstone's idol and she meets her? But Cher's not blonde. What the heck?
No, see, what the folks at home are experiencing right now from Andy is called World Series brain rot.
Yeah.
And this is what happens when you've been on the road for the entire month of October.
Okay. Yeah, like, Nicktober.
Okay. You've been, this is what happens, you guys. Like you are on planes, you are up late, you are up early, or out late, up early, working all the time. And there's not much of a break in the schedule. And so this is it. World Series brain rot. This is about the time it really hits hard. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yes, the games, the hardest games to cover are probably the middle games of the CS, because you've been out for so long and the finish line isn't there yet. I mean, it's different when you're a beat writer. I did it as the beat guy for, you know, for the Royals and the Dodgers. And then you're just like, you're in it. You know the people, you're building all year towards the chance to cover something like this. And as a national guy, you're sort of like trying to figure out who's who. Thank you. Yes. Oh, we can talk about how these D-backs remind me of the 2014 Kansas City Royals.
Oh,
buddy.
Baby.
But yeah, there's just a, like, for example, Sunday I got in and I had no clean clothes. I was wearing the only clean clothes I had, right? So I check into the Fairfield Inn and I'm like, all right, I got to do laundry. And so I go downstairs and I get changed to do laundry from the nice lady there. And then I come downstairs again, and because I forgot to get detergent, so I get detergent from the nice lady there. And then I put the laundry into the washer and I wash it. And then I put it into the machine next to it to dry. And I ran the cycle and I opened it up half an hour later, still dry. And I'm like, ah, these stupid, you know, are still wet, you know, these stupid hotel, you know, dryers, what the heck, you know? And so I'm like, all right, I'll dry it on extra hot. You know, that's the setting. So I do it again and I come through and I'm like, what? It's still, you know, half an hour later, it's still wet. And I open up and as I'm looking at the machine and it says washer.
Those clothes are just clean, baby.
And that was my Sunday. That's what I did on Sunday, you know, is I, and yeah, they were, and then I went to put them in the dryer and I dried them. And of course the dryer wasn't strong enough to actually dry them. So I had, and then, but at that point it was like, I had to go to the ballpark, you know, so I had like kind of damp clothing and then I had to just drape my, like, you know, socks and shirts and underpants all over my hotel room to air dry. It's, I mean, like, just John, like the life of kings, man.
John Heyman's just like to the guy next to him, was like, hey, did you see McCullough today? He's a little moist.
Looks like he jumped in the pool.
Thought it was a dry heat.
I've told the story 13 times on multiple podcasts, but the first time I ever met Andy was in the Houston airport after game 5 of the 2017 World Series. And he was in a fugue state. Like, I was trying to, like, hey, what's up, Andy? You know, like, hey, respect your right. And he was like, he had blood dripping from one ear. He was looking off in the distance, just you speaking in tongues. Like, because that was one of the craziest games, if not the craziest game in baseball history almost. And so we were all up late doing rewrites and this and that, and he was gone, man. Like, that's the first time I ever met Andy, and I was like, this guy's weird as hell.
Yeah, and it was, but, you know, an accurate depiction.
That's what it feels like this time of year. And so for the folks who are grinding along, I mean, that's a lot of, look, the folks at home, they're reading this stuff, these guys are working really hard, like, seriously, like, to be earnest about it, especially our crew, dang it, you guys are doing good work. So finish line's almost here. And no more laundry to do in the Phoenix, whatever, Fairfield Inn or whatever it was. Like, I was listening to that story, and I was remembering the old days at this place where they forgot to do things like set budgets. And do you remember this? Like, there was one guy that would approve expenses here. His name was, oh my God, it was like Gunther or something like that. Anyway, like, it was one guy for the whole company. All right, so you'd be in the middle of a dinner, and before the, like, you'd like sign, and then, like, and then that, and you put the expense in, and before you were in your car, it had been approved by this guy. Okay, and he did this for like every writer in the company. So as you can imagine, right, with this guy like sort of overwhelmed, like, stuff got through. So the great thing is I never had the laundry problem because I just dropped it off at the hotel dry cleaning. Which is so bad. And like, in this current state, if I saw someone do that, I'd be losing my mind. But this was a different time and a different.
I can only imagine what was going through the woman at the front desk at the Fairfield Inn's mind when I walked down to see her for the fourth time with a stack of dimes that I had in my bag, saying, can you please change these into quarters? And she, after she'd already broken a $5 bill to give me quarters.
I have to get the story out because it's the hardest I've ever seen my wife laugh at me, which is a very high bar. But when I went to college, right? So I was in the dorms. I was 16 years old. That's a different story. That's a long story. But I was in the dorms at 16. And so now I'm doing my own laundry. And I put everything in the dryer and I take the fabric softener and I just neatly, deftly tuck it into the lint trap. You know, because that's where it looks like where a dryer sheet should go. Just it fits perfectly. And the people there I had two people watching me and they're going, your mommy did your laundry, didn't she? Didn't she? And it was humiliating. And so when I told my wife that, because she knew me when I was a little bit older than that, but not much, I needed a lot of work. My mommy did do everything for me.
You were in college at 16, Doogie Howser?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was.
What the hell are you doing this?
It wasn't a good college.
Shouldn't you be like, shooting rockets into the sky or you know, curing cancer, something useful?
I had a 2.6 GPA in high school. So it's like, I'm not smart. They just screwed up. It was like the 70s or 80s or whatever. They're just like, yeah, whatever. You know, you seem smart. Like, hey, you move up. And yeah. We'll talk about
baseball. I would watch a documentary about Grant's 20s.
Well, no, because my 20s weren't that exciting. I was a homebody because I was with my wife. You know, we didn't go out. We just hung out together. But my teens, whew, yeah, there you go.
Mark is just staring. Mark is just like, he's like, is there a way we can monetize this? Can Grant do a weekly diary? Like,
no, I was just thinking this is just a horrific idea. Hard pass. What's next?
Let's talk baseball. Jesus. 10 minutes in. This is a record. 10 minutes in. Let's talk baseball. Have you noticed anything in the World Series that's caught your eye? Shall we talk about Corbin Carroll, Brandon Pafat? What's going on? World Series. What are you seeing on the ground? Andy, it's up to you.
Yeah. Brandon Pafat's been great for the Diamondbacks. He lost last night. You know, the offense did not do much against, you know, whatever Max Scherzer's latest sort of Scherzerian performance. John Gray was great out of the bullpen. You know, the D-backs, when they're not on the bases, they can't really wreak havoc. And the Rangers did a good job of keeping them off the bases last night. There was also a pretty poorly executed play with Tony Parascica, the third base coach, I think kind of hung Christian Walker out to dry a little bit. Walker seems like he kind of took the heat, but it seemed pretty clearly to be on the third base coach there.
Really? I don't know about that.
I mean,
it was a clear stop sign.
Yeah, after he'd been wheeling his arm. Like, he's wheeling his arm as Walker breaks from second base, right? Walker did not get a good jump. He's not a runner. They have a great fielder in right field. The coach is wheeling him in, and as soon as Walker catches that sign, right, he's head down hauling ass to the plate. Like, yeah, sure. Like, should he look up at third base maybe again? But that's also how you get hurt, right? Like, he's not – like, this isn't Corbin Carroll we're talking about. Christian Walker's a big man, you know, and you're talking about, like, potentially blowing a hamstring if he all of a sudden has to hit the brakes. And so I just thought it was a – you know, just poorly executed all around, right? There's some blame for Walker, but I think more for Parascica.
Fair point. I just as a remember some guys guy, myself, Tony Parascica was on the Giants bench in like 1992. And I just freaking love that I'm talking about him right now. Tony Parascica. Hell yeah. I can see your point now where if you've got Garcia is the arm that you're dealing with and Walker, correct, you know, runs like a walker and you just you kind of maybe want to throw that up.
Runs like a walker.
Yeah. That's a good line. Oh, I should maybe use that. That's good.
He does run like a walker.
Go for it.
Good point. Like you cannot throw the brakes on there and expect to play the rest of the series healthy. Right? Like that is true.
Yeah. And yet it's the Rangers that are like spraying.
Max Scherzer. Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Garcia. I mean, we've probably seen the last of Garcia as well, which, I mean, because that has to be an oblique, right?
It looked oblique-esque, and obliques are a month. Yeah. you know, they're generally a month, and you know, it's not the sort of thing you can just sort of, you know, hit with Tor at all and change, right? Obliques are just, you just got to let it pass.
Because if you could, they'd all do it already. That's why they put you on the shelf for so long.
Right. Yeah. So we don't know just yet. But it's hard to like come up with a good injury there. Right. Like when a guy swings and immediately grabs his side, it's like best case scenario, back spasms, you know, maybe, but like
maybe it's his liver. You know, my liver.
Yeah, it's a kidney stone.
I mean, at least you can like hit through that, you'd think. But like, look, I think
James Shields passed a kidney stone in the 2014 postseason.
Man, that's amazing.
Hit the bell. Hit the bell,
hit
baby.
It. Do it. There you go. But like you look at this guy. And he looks like he could probably play linebacker somewhere. He's just this gigantic dude. And, like, dude. Yeah, we see it, right? I think that oblique injury, again, we were speculating, but, like, things like that just crop up more often. These guys are so much bigger. I mean, it's just, I guess, more muscle to pull or whatever. And I just remember, like, yeah, as a kid, like, that wasn't an injury you'd hear all the time. At least that's not what I remember. And then now, like the last 7-8 years, it's like, yeah, it's the dreaded oblique and everyone knows what it means. So maybe it's just a byproduct of the fact that these guys are bigger and stronger and these things happen, which is too bad because, man, how much fun has he been?
You know what I would do if I had the Diamondbacks? I would get a guy to do one of those. I saw it in a documentary once where this guy could clap his hands together, rub them real fast, and then touch the muscle, and then it's healed. You ever see that documentary, The Karate Kid?
Well, if the Diamondbacks were going to do it, they should do it to Corey Seager's wrists and try and put a spell on them. Seager's just been obliterating them.
That home run was just so beautiful because it was uncomplicated. He was sitting changeup. He says, okay, this guy knows that I'm swinging on the first pitch most of the time. I'm thinking fastball. He's doing rock, paper, scissors stuff to where he's going, yeah, I'm going to sit on this changeup and hope it's right there. And he hit that ball so hard. I watched it like 7 times. It was such a fun home run to watch.
The fought homer, you mean? The second one.
The Fought Homer, yes.
Friend of the show, Brandon Fought, who's been great. I must reiterate. Yeah, I mean, Seager is such an impressive hitter when he is healthy and sort of locked in, which he's been for, you know, the past several months. Obviously, he missed some time. Like, I'd have to look it up. It's like somewhere 110, 120 games. And, like, he was an 8-win player or something like that, 7-win player. You know, playing good defense. He led the American League in doubles, even though, again, he missed like 30 or 40 games, 1,000 OPS. I mean, the homer he hit in game one off Paul Sewald was like just a titanic sort of shot. And I was talking to people, I wrote a story about Dan Heron as the Diamondbacks pitching strategist. You know, so I was talking to a lot of people in their pitching department over the days leading up to, you know, game one. And you're talking about, you know, like they're talking about game planning and strategy and this, that, and the other thing. And like the one thing I was just as a joke, I'd be like, so like you're going to, you know, obviously put in there, don't throw Corey Seager first pitch fastballs, right? And it's like, aha, yeah, you know, we're not going to do that. And then boom. Like Paul Sewald was like, maybe I'll sneak this heater by him. Poof! Like just destroyed it. And it's so funny because Seager is like, he does what he does. He hunts up in the zone early in the count. And somehow he just brings, it's like, it was like watching Kyle Schwarber in portions of that NLCS where you're like, how is he controlling the zone to get this pitch? Like, how is he doing it? But Seager just does it on the first pitch. It's like he has a homing device, like right here, where it's like, well, just put it there, and I'm going to hit the living shit out of it to right field.
Like you, Andy, you've covered that guy, okay? So you've seen the evolution of his game, and I guess I'm curious as to, you know, he's obviously operating at an elevated level. Are we watching someone who's just gotten hot, been healthy? Is there something different from what he was earlier in his career? How would you assess that?
No, I mean, so the thing is, so I covered Corey Seager in 2016, and he finished third in the MVP race that year, right? Like, he was the, like, probably unanimous rookie of the year. You know, he was 22 and he was expected to be a perennial MVP candidate, you know, and what happened is he got hurt. He dealt with a lot of back problems in 2017. In 2018, he had Tommy John. He also had a hip procedure, you know, after the Tommy John. And so all of 2019, he was sort of, you know, messed up physically.
Those are bad injuries.
Yes.
Like back.
Yeah. Bad. Yes.
Like those are back. Not your normal. Oh, my hamstring. No, back and hip. Are you freaking kidding me?
Right. Yeah. He's a shortstop and he got Tommy John. Like, yeah, he's had, you know, major, major medical procedures over the years. 2019, you know, he was just sort of all jacked up because he's coming back from like two different surgeries. 2020, he was the World Series MVP. He was awesome. You know, in 2021, he was a little bit banged up again. 2022, banged up again. And it's when he's healthy, he is a monster. It's the only issue with him has just been health. Can his body, you know, he has a big frame. You know, he's a big, strong guy. He's a player who, you know, 25 years ago would never touch the shortstop position.
He would
be in left field. He'd be a first baseman. But, you know, he came up at a time when, you know, between his, you know, the athleticism he had in his youth with infield shifting, the Dodgers were able to make him into, you know, a fairly competent defender. And to his credit, he's, you know, been able to sort of lean out a little bit. And I think he was a Gold Glove, you know, candidate this year. I don't know what his exact defensive metrics are, but they've always been like he's perfectly fine, you know. Yeah. And so when you have that value at – when you have the ability to play that position, when you hit like a first baseman, that's how you get this sort of player. Like if Ohtani didn't exist, you could make a pretty strong case that at 110 games or whatever it is, he's the MVP of the American League. Absolutely. So it's not – so Mark, so the long-winded way of like – he's not different. This is the player he was supposed to be. He's just dealt with just a ton of injuries in his 20s. And now as he enters his 30s, it's not going to be easier. But this is the guy who the Dodgers thought he might be.
Look, I think one of the things I miss about covering the sport every day is going to the park every day. And when you go to the park every day and you're out on the field, you see these people and like there's a certain scale you can sort of put him on because you're standing right by him, right? Like it's different. You can see it on TV. You know who big guys are and whatever, but like it's obviously different when you're seeing somebody up close. And I will never forget the first time I laid eyes on Seager.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. I come up the dugout steps at Dodger Stadium and I get to the field and I look up and I'm like, look at the number on the kid's back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're shitting me. Like, I don't remember who. It might have been Anthony DeComo, a friend of the pod, Anthony DeComo. I'm like, this is the shortstop?
Yeah.
That's the shortstop.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm looking like, you're shitting me, right? Like, no way. And then he goes out and, like, backhands a ball and starts warming. I'm like, holy shit, that's a shortstop. So, like, I think when you're talking about how big this guy is, and like, again, like, you know, there's that thing with the bigger dudes, like you think they might get hurt more or whatever. He's obviously caught some bad luck, but like I think of like, you know, guys tend to get hurt like when they're just bigger than what they're supposed to be at their position. Like that was my very first impression of him, and I'll never forget it. It was just like it broke my sense of scale. Okay, because you're used to seeing your typecast players. It was the same way, like, you know, Matt Wieters was a giant catcher. I remember covering him back in the day. Like, he was enormous, and you're just like, God, catchers shouldn't be that big.
Right.
Anyway, same feeling with Seager. And so, yeah, it's almost like he's had such health issues that it's easy to forget what he looks like when he's healthy. I guess that's what my thought was when I was listening to you kind of go through all that.
Well, I think he did get a 10-year, $325 million contract. So people he's not sneaking up on anyone, he's good. He's really good as long as he's healthy.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
That contract did, I think, exceed a lot of people's expectations for what he was going to get. I mean, I think, you know, look, I mean, if you had asked people in the game, they probably would have pegged it closer to like 250 or whatever that he was going to get. And he ended up getting this just mega deal. And like, he's lived up to it in, you know, the first couple of years. I mean, last year he was dealing with some health stuff to getting adjusted to a new place, you know, all that. But you can see, like, he's an incredible hitter, and he does it in a style that I don't know many hitters like him. His aggression, like, he
sticks. But he'll take a walk.
He can take a walk. That's certainly not his preference. He comes up there looking to hit immediately. He's not trying to work the count. He's not trying to, like, you know, get into an advantage 2-1. He comes up there hunting specific zones, and he's good enough to get that and to succeed with that. And so there are times, right, when he's going bad where you're like, why is he swinging at that? Or, you know, Jesus, Corey, like, you know, you see like three guys walk and then he's just first pitch hacking. Like, but that's his approach. And it works for him because he has these skills, because of, you know, all the work he does. You know, he's become like Axl Rose in that he doesn't like give interviews anymore. It's very funny. He just hates doing the interview. Like, he's polite and, you know, he answers questions and most, but he just like does not enjoy it in any meaningful way. And so he has to be on the podium every night, just sort of being like, yeah, no, it's good. It's always good. You know, like he, when you see emotion from him, right? Like he screamed after he hit that home run, in game one, and I'm watching it and I'm like, I remember that. I saw him do that in 2017. That's the exact same emotion he had, because you don't normally see that from Corey Seager. And you saw it, you know, the last night he hits the home run, just nothing, just whoop, cool, all right, like flips his bat. It's when it's in that big spot, you can see that, you know, how much he actually cares about this stuff.
Well, we've hit a lull. So
here, the here's some words. Here's some words, Royals, man. It's crazy.
That rhyme with Corey. Story, allegory. All right. Wait, that was a Simpsons reference. That's for the heads. That's for the heads that are waiting for me to make a Simpsons reference. All right. I was waiting for Mark to jump in on something. I guess it was my turn. I don't know,
your
man.
Turn. Like Corey, I was listening to him. Like he was holding court. It was good.
It was good. No.
I was learning something.
I don't want to give listeners the impression that like, I was like, oh yeah, great story. And you really kill the frickin' podcast. No, it was good. I think so. Corey Seager's contract, you're shaking your head, Andy. Corey Seager's contract, to me was a little excessive. But at the same time, this is because, you know, we're a pro-labor podcast, maybe the only one. And we I don't want to say it was too much, because when you get a season like this, a postseason like this, if this works out, boom, whole contract paid for. Whole contract. And like, these are the big swings. Are free agents going to age poorly? Almost always. Almost always. Yeah. You know, unless you're like Max Scherzer on the first deal or Greg Maddux when he signed with the Braves. It's going to be a disaster by the end, but if you get a postseason like this, that's the reason you're doing the whole thing. But the Giants with Barry Zito, like what he did in 2012, it's the best contract of all time. Even though he was worth like 0.001 war, that was the best contract of all time because he came through in 2012. So if you get that kind of performance from a guy like Seager, justifies the whole endeavor.
This is like the AJ Burnett thing in New York, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing.
His game two start of the World Series pays for all of it. Yeah.
Right.
The thing with Seager, and they, you know, they paired it with Marcus Semien signing him relatively, you know, I don't remember which one was first, but they signed them both, you know, pretty quickly, is, you know, that's a $500 million flag you're putting down.
Yeah.
And you're saying like, look, the Texas Rangers are for real again. Right. And it didn't materialize last season. They had a lot of turnover. And, you know, they Chris Woodward was pushed out. John Daniels was pushed out. Chris Young was elevated. They brought in Bruce Bochy. And they continued sort of being aggressive. They continued spending in the offseason. You know, they gave remember Jacob DeGrom? They gave him a ton of money. And he's, like, not going to pitch for them because he's undergoing Tommy John. You know, they signed Nathan Eovaldi, who's turned out to be great. They were aggressive at the deadline. You know, getting Jordan Montgomery. They gave up the Luis Angel Acuna for Max Scherzer, which was a pretty significant, you know, and taking back Scherzer's money and, you know, taking on his contract for next year. And there's a lot of these moves that in a vacuum, you're like, I don't know if that was totally worth it. Or like, man, they gave up a lot for Scherzer. He's like always got a neck spasm going. But they're two wins away from the World Series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it all pays for itself. Yeah. Like it all, like you understand why teams default towards sensible decisions. But when you see something like this, you're like, yeah, this is why you go for it, because everything is free. You know, it's house money at this point when you make it to the World Series.
Well, I know Grant will appreciate this aspect of it. I get a kick out of when there's a team that's never done it before. That's really close. Like they've never won a World Series. Like that's, it's cool to see one finally come off the board. Okay?
One of six teams.
Yeah. And this is a team that, by the way, if you look at their, again, from a historic standpoint, you know, and if you're a round table ahead who's been watching the Rangers your whole life, like, you know, I'm speaking to you here. Like, I mean, there have been some lean years or times where just like it's never going to happen here, yeah, right? The excuse always being the ballpark and the heat and the ball, yeah, like flies out of there and like you never quite put it together. I mean, and even the start of the franchise is rooted in something not great, right? Like, this is the second incarnation of the Senators. They also sucked. They moved. They come out to Texas. And, like, you know, for really years, like, looking for an identity, looking to establish roots, looking to kind of build towards something like this. So it's, you know, again, like a decade ago, they were really close, right? I mean, really, right, really close. And we saw the excitement there. But I just think it's really cool to see him, you know, like you said, man, two wins away. And the way they've done it in this very aggressive manner, I think, is really great too. And they've certainly assembled a team worth watching. So, yeah, like I think I'm kind of getting a kick out of the fact that, hey, man, we might be able to take one off the board here finally.
Yeah, I do. You know, I'm a professional journalist, so I'm not supposed to root for teams. But I also covered the 2011 World Series. And just watching that, as someone who has no emotional attachment to the Rangers, I feel like I'm still scarred from watching that, because
if
you're watching that and you know that you're one strike away, one just scintilla of athleticism from your right fielder away from winning a World Series, which you've never done, as a Giants fan who had just watched the 2010 Giants, I thought the Giants were never going to win, ever. Like, it was just a part of their identity. They were low rent Cubs. They were just never going to win. You know, that was what's going on. So I felt so bad for the Rangers. And ever since, I've been like, oh, maybe this is the year. And it hasn't been. But now, I don't know.
You know what I think about with that World Series, the 2011 World Series, is, you know, obviously, right, Freeze ties it in the ninth. For unknown reasons, Nelson Cruz is in right field and not Andy Chavez. So Freeze hits the triple over Cruz's head. And they tie the game in the bottom of the ninth. And in the top of the 10th, Josh Hamilton hit a two-run bomb.
Yeah.
And when he hits that ball, you have to just – I just imagine he had to be thinking, like, I just won us the World Series.
Yeah.
Like, that feeling must have just been – and then to have it taken away in the bottom of the inning, like that swing, I don't know how Rangers fans process it. And it's hard to assign, like, it's hard to assign extrapolate big meaning from discrete moments, but the franchise hadn't made it, you know, they still had a really good team the next year and the year after that, but there had to have been some sort of psychic scar from getting that close and, you know, not, and having it just pulled away from you, you know, and they spent like a decade kind of trying to get back to that moment, and they're here now.
And it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes you get right up there and you're the Guardians and you've got, wow, you know, we whiffed on Tony Fernandez, didn't make that play, but we'll be back. We'll be back. And then you just, I guess they did get that close again in 2016. And, we'll be back. Well, and it doesn't always happen.
Dude, like the we'll be back in this sport is a kiss of death. Boy, because I remember listening to the New York Mets say that 2015. We'll be back.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be back. Look at all these arms. Like, we'll be back. That's what they said when the Royals beat him. Whoa. What the?
It's not me. Which one of it?
Was that have you replaced the Royals bell with that? Because
That's the Carrig talking about the 2015 Mets.
That's noise. It's a freaking car alarm.
That was, I think, great. Someone's stealing.
Carrig's going to talk about all they learned from Bartolo Colon.
Hey, still pitching, by the way. Incredible. Still pitching.
Yeah, I mean,
about the second round draft pick.
So, like, the Phillies, anyway, we talked a little bit last time, like, the Phillies were, like, too vibes-based, right? And they actually were talking about, after they got eliminated, like, last year when we lost the World Series, you know, they were like, we're going to build off this. We're going to learn from this. We're going to come back. And Nick Castellanos was like, we said that last year. I'm not really sure what to take out of this year. it's hard. I mean, that's something that people on the Dodgers have talked about over the years, you know, when they came close, is just how hard it is to keep doing it. And there's a reason why you know, between luck, between attrition, between all that stuff, there hasn't been a repeat champion since the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, you see it just year after year, how great teams, I mean, you know, the Braves in 2022 were pretty much in every measure better than the Braves in 2021. And they, you know, got crashed out in their first round. Like, it's just, it's so hard to get back to the summit. And so, yeah, like, it for the Rangers to 10 years later with almost a, you know, completely, I mean, yeah, the cast is completely different. You know, the only person who's still around from the 2010 World Series is Bruce Bochy. So, you know, who knows?
Dude, I'll bet you, like, it's just kind of different when you look at it in the relation to all of baseball history, this lack of repeat champions or even repeat pennant winners. I think just about every era of the sport has had that element of like this team that just keeps winning. Like the Chicago Cubs, believe it or not, had been that team in like the turn of the century that won these three straight pennants. And like, you go on, obviously the Yankees had that run, the Oakland A's, right? Three straight in the early 70s. Like this had been part of what we'd come to know about the sport, is that like repeats happen and like it's rare, but it happens. Not anymore. Right? Not anymore. And like that is very different. I mean, is it a good thing? Probably, because like that just probably tells you that there's more, it's more competitive and all that stuff. But yeah, it does kind of like bring into focus just how difficult it is to win at this. And so to me, like over time, like, okay, remember the Braves, like all those division titles they had won, they racked up in that period. And like, but the first thing people would say is, like, oh, only one World Series.
Right.
It's just like, to me, that is like crazy. The more I look back at that, it's like, if that's your takeaway from this, then I think we're having a hard time understanding what excellence in baseball actually looks like, because that was it.
Yeah.
I think the Yankees broke a lot of brains.
Yes.
98, 99. You know, not the 50s. You know, like obviously that broke a lot of. But that was you win the pennant, you're in the World Series. Like that's a little bit easier to explain. But when you're into the wild card era and you've got the Yankees, just like, yeah, we're the Yankees. We're gonna show up and we're gonna win. And guess what? We're gonna come back and we're gonna win again. And you start to think, gosh, the best team's just gonna keep winning. Like, right. That's how baseball works. Yeah. It's like basketball or something. Broke brains. Right.
But the closest we've come is the Astros, right? They're the team who has been the closest to that, probably, in that they've won two World Series in this, you know, in a 5-year window, right?
Yeah.
Because the Dodgers, like, they have been as good, if not better, than the Astros in the regular season, but they've only won one World Series, you know, and that was in 2020, you know, when it was a different sort of set of circumstances. And so it's just, I mean, I think we've talked about this before on the pod, Mark, but like people around the sport, right, view those Braves teams as like, wow, like what an incredible achievement.
Yes.
They were so good.
The sort of common perception among baseball fans is sort of like, oh, what a bunch of losers. Like,
yeah, they talk about it.
It's weird. I understand it. I understand it because at the end of the day, you watch sports, one, to distract yourself from our crumbling world, but also to, you know, get schadenfreude at the failures of your friends, right? and then the other is like occasionally your team wins it all, right? So like when your team wins it all, like that's the best feeling. The next best feeling is laughing at your friends' teams when they don't win. And so every other team becomes a subject of scorn. So like, you know,
and you're almost guaranteed the second one, like that one you get on the regular, where you get to point at someone and say you didn't.
I mean,
you know,
Padres fans make fun of Dodgers fans when the Dodgers get knocked out of the postseason. The Padres didn't make the playoffs, like
never.
But that's the joy of it. The joy of it is that, you know, the Padres have never won a World Series,
never,
right? But that's the joy of it, is you get to, you know, inflict. You get to transfer your suffering onto your fellow man, essentially.
Yes.
That is sports fandom, right, in our interconnected world.
You know what's crazy about, we were talking about the Braves just now, like, and like, oh, those losers or whatever.
Yeah.
They get talked about like they're the Buffalo Bills.
I know.
And it's wild to me.
But that's like, another thing too, is like, the Buffalo Bills should be celebrated.
I know.
They made 4 straight Super Bowls.
Oh,
but,
man.
You know, you lose. It's just, it's a weird, we have a very binary way of assessing success or failure, right? It's either you win, you know, and to an extent, like I remember, you know, I wrote this story about Farhan Zaidi many years ago where he was just like, the only point is to win. You know, you get one Friday Night Lights, you know, 29 teams get a Sopranos ending and one team gets the Friday Night Lights season one ending. And that's it, right? Anyway, it's like, if you don't win, right, it's a failure. That's the way that we have come to understand, you know. But I think if you spend time around the industry, you know how hard it is to do it. But that's the way the people who run these teams in the baseball operations department, at least, are wired. Like, they know intellectually that it's all out of their control and there's luck and variance, blah, 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 blah. But they are sort of – they're crazy people who are wired, you know, to only accept winning as a, you know, as the only way to call this season a success.
Yeah. I wonder if it's age or experience in my job or, but I used to be one of those people where it was just like, if you don't win the World Series, failure. Yeah. And now I don't see it like that. And when the Giants, when I think back on 2021 and the Giants winning 107 games, I'm not going, gosh, you know, it's Wilmer Flores, man. If that was called correctly, I just think back and go, that was a hell of a season. That was fun, wire to wire fun. Didn't work out, but what an accomplishment. And I don't think I would have been there 20 years ago. I think in my head, I would have been just stewing over it. And I don't know if that's because I've seen the Giants actually win the World Series when I wasn't expecting it, or if it's just because I'm older and wiser now. I love those seasons. I love good seasons. Great. Yeah. The Braves are good. The Braves back then were really good.
I think that I can relate to that somewhat in that when I was a beat writer specifically for the Royals and the Dodgers, and maybe this is the easiest way is to describe this with the Dodgers, right? I took over the Dodgers beat in 2016. The team had won the division 3 years in a row. They had the highest payroll in the sport. I viewed it as my job as to essentially like, not keep score, but just remind the readers of what the expectations were. That this is a team that has been to the playoffs, right? They haven't won a World Series since 1988. Doing less than that should count as a failure, because that's what they are saying to you. They are saying that their goal is to win the World Series. So I'm here to remind you of that every day. You know, use the phrase like championship aspirations.
Yeah.
And when you're in it and, you know, as a beat writer, it's different than being a fan, but you have the same level of intense following of what's going on and investment in the outcomes, because it changes what you're going to write and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, so when you get to the end and you don't win, your team doesn't win the World Series, you know, you have to describe it, you know, based on what the expectations were coming in. It's when you get out of it, right, and you're not like living in it day to day as whether, you know, a fan, whether as a beat writer, but when you have more of a 30,000 foot view, like I can look at this Dodger season where they won 100 games and crashed out, you know, in like disastrous fashion in the DS and be like, well, it was still a success, man. I mean, they won the division. Like, they had a lot of things go wrong and they were still had a chance. But that's not, I mean, that's because I'm not invested daily in what they're doing, in the way that fans are, in the way that, you know, and I wasn't invested daily in what the Barbs were doing during those years. And so it's just, it's a matter of perspective, I feel like.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. I one of the first podcasts I think we ever did as a trio, I claimed that the Dodgers were a dynasty and you guys yelled at me.
No, and they're not.
Yeah, well, I just...
They're not, Grant, they're not.
I'm just saying that there's like a level between like a really good team for a long time and a dynasty, and they're in that tier. It's like a
you should
Dollar Tree dynasty. You know what I mean?
Invent a German word for that, because I'm sure the Germans have a word for that. They have a word for everything.
Scheißen place. Yeah.
Scheißen, that's
not... Dodgerhosen, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. That was 2 years ago that we yelled at you for that.
Yeah.
Are you still scarred by it? Like, you just
I think about it a lot because they won 100 games again and they did it with like I don't know. They did it with like Elmer Descends in the rotation. Like it's
Elmer Descends.
You know what I mean? Like to me, that's not a dynasty. I think it's what I settled on. It's just it's a ridiculous stretch of success. Regular season, I get it, but from an organization, and baseball shouldn't be as easy as they make it look. As far as
the that's what, by the way, that's what Max Scherzer was using to repair the cut on his thumb was Elmer Descends glue.
Oh, they killed him and made glue out of him.
Oh
no,
that's bleak.
Yeah,
I mean, a horse.
We don't have to relitigate this, but you have to win more than one title to be a dynasty.
I know, no.
You just can't like the Astros. Are the closest thing we have, and they won two, and they were separated by so many years that it's just hard to.
Yes, yeah, so it's just hard to give them there too. Obviously,
yeah. What's that?
There's other context there too. Obviously.
Right? Yeah, I mean, yes, sure. I mean, so yeah, that there's not. Yeah, I don't think so. They're not the big red machine.
No. I know, and I'm aware of that because I've watched dynasties before. Warriors, right? What's up, Mark? What's
Dude,
up?
Warriors. Look, and your 49ers were a dynasty back in the day, yes. Obviously.
Yeah, back when I had hair.
Yeah. Right? Like, I mean, the NHL actually denotes dynasties. You know that?
Do
like in
really?
Their history? Yeah. So the Edmonton Oilers were one. The New York Islanders won four cups in the 80s. Like that. Yeah, they denote dynasties. So that would be a fun exercise on an offseason, I guess. If baseball did that, who would they be?
You know who will be a dynasty? Is the Philadelphia Eagles, because they can't be stopped.
Birds, go birds.
Birds
they have the Cowboys good. Coming up, don't they?
Yeah, big one.
Big week.
One. Yeah. Cowboys coming to town for first real test of the season for the Birds. So should be interesting.
I heard somebody say this, and I'm sure it's true, that Dak and Jalen Hurts haven't matched up head-to-head very much because one of them's usually hurt. So
I mean, it's not Jalen.
Well, anyway.
By the way, did you see Travis Kelce was at the game? Was that game one?
Yeah, saw that.
It's a psyop, right? They're trying
he's
to mess
running.
With our brains, right?
He's
they're,
running.
They're doing something to mess with our brains. I don't know the exact. I have some theories, but there's something afoot here. That was weird. Like, it was a game in Texas between a team from Texas and a team from Arizona, and a man from Cleveland who plays for a team in Missouri. Was just there at the game, and they showed him on the big screen. It feels I don't know. All of a sudden
he's going to be in like Starship Troopers videos. You know, it's like, would you like to know more? Like, I'm Travis Kelce, and you got to sign up for the insect.
Yeah, program. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There's something afoot.
It's as good a theory as any.
We are living in the world's worst Paul Verhoeven movie.
All right.
That's a film director, Mark.
Thank you.
All right. This has been episode 72, The Roundtable, the podcast you would not buy for a dollar. See, I brought it back. I got a Paul Verhoeven reference in there. All right. Do you not watch movies, Mark? All right.
No. Yes. No.
We'll be back next week to kind of wrap things up, right? Because we're about to go on season hiatus-ish. Do we?
Yeah.
Does this podcast take a break?
Who knows? Producer Brian will let us know.
Mm-hmm. The day before.
We'll be back next week to talk about who won the Dern World Series. So we will see you then. We'll have a lot of hot takes. So see you then.
I was very wrong.